The insurance company said his policy didn't cover them.
They had no money to pay for the funeral. It's so hard nowadays with all the gangs and rap music.
What about robots?
Oh, they're everywhere.
I don't even know why the scientists make them.
Darren and I have a policy with Old Glory Insurance that covers us in case we're attacked by robots.
An insurance policy with a robot plan?
Mm-hmm.
Well, certainly I'm too old.
Old Glory covers anyone over the age of 50 against robot attack, regardless of current health.
I'm Sam Waterston of the popular TV series Law & Order. As a senior citizen, you're probably aware of the threat robots pose. Robots are everywhere, and they eat old people's medicine for fuel. Well, now there's a company that offers coverage against the unfortunate event of a robot attack, Old Glory Insurance. Old Glory will cover you with no health checkup or age consideration. You need to feel safe. And that's harder and harder to do nowadays because robots may strike at any time. And when they grab you with those metal claws, you can't break free because they're made of metal and robots are strong. Now, for only $4 a month, you can achieve peace of mind in a world full of crime and robots with Old Glory Insurance.
Robots! They're coming! Robots!
Oh, it's a friendly robot. This time.
So don't cower under your Afghan any longer. Make a choice. Old Glory Insurance. For when the metal ones decide to come for you. And they will.
Hello, everyone. Good evening. I hope you can hear us this way, because I'm kind of losing my voice. I'm Astra. I'm from the Vienna Metal Lab. It's the Viennese hackerspace. And I'm here with George from NYCR, the Hello. New York City resistor. New York City hackerspace. Tonight we're gonna give you a little insight on robots and technological development in this direction during the last 5 to 10 years. It's just a very, very short overview, since there's like multiple directions in this in which this could go. Actually, this was considered to be some kind of a lol talk, so therefore there's some kind of XKCD comics if you like them. However, we found out during our very exclusive research that there is an actual threat posed by robots, and tonight we're gonna try to find out whether we should be frightened from a possible robot uprising, or maybe not, or maybe there's ways to walk around this. So science, as in technology, as in also robotics, could save the world, but also, it could probably be the worst threat that has ever been imposed on humanity. So, why did I want to start with this? So this is basically science as we know it. This is what we think of a robot, I guess, in development, the latest in technology. However, if we look at statistics that have been posted recently on IO9, we can see that most of the robots come from the Asian Pacific region. There's still Japan right in front, followed by Singapore, then South Korea in a very hot third place, Germany, Sweden, and so on and so forth. If we look at who actually spends money on developing robotics, it's mostly still the automotive industry. We don't have accurate numbers from military usage. However, this is what especially development at universities is very strongly funded by. And given the fact that we saw how Japan is very much in front, just recently, South Korea's Ministry of Information and Communications gave a press release in which it basically said it hoped to introduce a series of internet-connected household robots this October 2009. Quote, the bots will be able to perform such household tasks as cleaning, monitoring homes, reading to children, and ordering pizza via the internet. So this is a very, very diverse range of what they want to do. Basically, they just left out military reasons, but that might be for political reasons. The Korean government also plans to roll out robocops that can pursue suspects and multi-legged or wheeled combat bots within the next 5 years. The bots will receive most of their commands via a wireless internet connection, keeping costs down to as little as $1,000. We'll see two or three bots during this presentation that can actually be assembled by parts that you can buy for as little as $1,000, although they might cost the US Army a little slightly bit more. Where do we actually find robots, and where do scientists find their inspiration for robots? Apparently, there's a very strong connect between science fiction and actual science. I think everyone knows the phaser rifles from Star Trek. So there's actually, this is in use. This is like a million piece produced rifle that's in use for the US Air Force in Iraq right now. Again, we see diverse development, like robotic cars, as we're talking of automotive industry is one of the main funders of robots today, that has been taken to a concept car level, where car companies, actually automotive companies, actually develop concept cars of which they know they cannot actually work as for now, but probably at some point. And these designs are also taken to actual product concepts that are freely available in the market right now, if you have the money for a Lamborghini, that is. A lot of these names that we hear that military robots actually carry are taken out of comics, which is kind of interesting. Here, for instance, is the Perceptor, which is a UGCV, standing for Unmanned Ground Combat Vehicle. You can have this with combat or without combat functionality, kind of. It can work in swarms, which is robots, well, like tanks of four, with a flying eye. Flying eye being a micro aerial robot that's hovering above the area and creating maps of the surroundings on the fly. If any of these robots, be these aerial vehicles or ground vehicles, loses the wireless connection to the other four robots, the other three robots. During the process, the other robots can manage to work around this and still forward commands to the one robot, but George will talk about this a little more. Here again, we see the flying eye and a Perceptor on the ground. One of the today most used Perceptors is the Crusher, which is one of these combat vehicles. It's completely autonomous. Of course, it can be steered by a remote control, but it can work freely, which also means as a combat vehicle that there is a slight threat of fail, basically, but I'm going to talk about this later.
So the military robots are incredibly scary to look at in the front line. Go back one, actually. Just imagine trying to see a warrior carrying that many rockets on his back, but now being invulnerable to your bullets. It's kind of horrifying. The Talon Swords is the first bot that was not to be used in the army that isn't autonomous. So you can't just send it a command to say, go here, and it will go there. You have to steer it completely. But it's still incredibly scary. And it's completely modular. And So the PackBot is slightly autonomous. You can tell it to go and give it instruction sets way ahead, and it will route and flip itself over, as well as do many incredible things. the actual iRobot promotional video, minus with my commentary. So it climbs stairs, can withstand a 400G shock, and it's waterproof, has multiple cameras and insights, can gun almost anywhere, and it's kind of hard to avoid. So if you're running, you're not going to be able to hide. It's kind of scary, actually. But at least it doesn't have a gun. When we started the Iraq War, or the United States started the Iraq War, there was, I think, zero in use, and we have over, I think, 6,000 in use today. So robots, in terms of general use, is expanding very fast. But land robots are fun and nice, especially when the PackBot can't really go... But air robots are actually a lot more scary, because not only can they just hover around, they are extremely deadly. So the Predator, which now has a couple hundred in use, travels in swarms of four. If you were to knock out a sensor of one of them, the other three will control its weapons. It shoots missiles as well as gunfire. Is generally used for surveillance, and right now doesn't require a requires a person to execute kill signals to actually pull the trigger. But it won't be very much longer before these robots can do it with their own free will, which is a much more scary day. And the what's most interesting is that the controllers are modeled after today's video game controllers, which means that the people that you're fighting are probably 17, and the week before, or that same night, you might be playing them on Xbox Live or your PlayStation Network, and these are the actual people that are fighting in wars remotely. And anyone who has played a video game knows you probably have done something in a video game you wouldn't do in real life. So removing the aspect of reality of actually being in front of your targets is a dehumanizing factor. And it also removes the ability to hide in open areas. If you were to be a terrorist, which is what people, these robots are mostly targeted against right now, creating a camp in the middle of nowhere is no longer a valid way of hiding. And what's more scary is that these robots can be built incredibly cheaply. This robot cost the US military $25,000, but it's easily built by hobbyists as well as anyone else who wants to use it for malicious intent for under $1,000. And they're also semi-autonomous, so which means you can tell them to go here and attack a target and they'll do it, or you can completely guide them. And they're built on the battlefield themselves. So they're built in about 10 minutes and launched by human soldiers. Kind of like a kite. And as you can see, very similar stuff for hobby grade is already sold. I couldn't, and it's really easy to attach circuitry to make these autonomous as well. In fact, MetaLab has a quadrocopter, which is autonomous and built by hand. The X-45 is also another one of the surveillance bots, which can hover overhead. And this one's, believe it or not, is under $1,000 of parts as well. Cost the military a lot more, but the actual design and concept is under $1,000. And it's incredibly scary to be able to drop bombs with no human impact, with no human risk, for under $1,000. These vehicles, It also makes running from police officers and military in terms of just being in front of a, if you're being chased by the police, these organic aerials or OAVs are designed, are being compacted to be frisbee size, where you toss them into the air, it goes up and creates a map of the area and the obstacles ahead. So even if you're completely familiar with the terrain that you're covering, the people right behind you already know what's ahead of you before you can even see it. Same goes for aquatic uses.
Just the last word on this boat. This is actually the first USV, and I constantly have to look it up, what it's standing for, the unmanned surface vehicle, surface in this case standing for water, that can be on the surface of water as well as underneath water. So the first completely unmanned as well as autonomous boat. Of course, all the sensors of these robots are pretty much exposed, especially with these boats, because they're all on the standing mast. Just the same technique has been applied recently to a 7-meter-long boat that was already a combat boat for the U.S. military, and yeah, it works. However, if you find one of these boats, so if you damage the mast, the boat is pretty much helpless. I'm pretty sure most of you have seen this. There were some YouTube videos of the big dog online, which scared people a lot, apparently. So the movements it makes aren't the ones that you'd expect from a military robot, usually. It's based on the fact that through the ankle movement and the hip movement, it walks, actually, or it moves very stabilized, because it can constantly calculate how to level out. So this is definitely something you would not be able to make with another robot. Basically, also because the behavior of this was so unseen before, I think, and so looking so unnatural, there was a very funny YouTube video, which was some kind of remake of this, which I'm spoiling right now because another person is giving a talk on this the day after tomorrow. So if you don't know it already, then look it up on YouTube. It's really nice. However, since we heard all these robots that we just saw that are already in use are either autonomous, like completely autonomous, or semi-autonomous, this meaning especially for aerial vehicles, meaning that they need input for starting and landing, which are, of course, the most difficult parts of the flight. And they would as well require input for firing a missile, Hellfire missiles, these are called. We as well have these unmanned ground vehicles that are completely autonomous, and combat vehicles as well. I showed another one of these, which was the Crusher before. The Oerlikon GDF-005 is currently not in use, which is due to the fact that last year, I think it went to through press, but very, very shortly only. There was an incident that was, of course, not recorded, when they tried to present the Oerlikon a second time. So the first time was a fail already. They presented it a second time, and while it was in shooting mode, it all of a sudden turned around, which was basically not programmed. Nobody gave the input to this, and faced the VIP Tribune. That might sound familiar. Maybe some of you have seen this kind of probably funny movie with Eddie Murphy.
Best Defense.
Best Defense, right, Best Defense. In Best Defense, obviously nobody comes to harm. In this case, 9 people were killed and 14 injured. And it's only just a matter of fact that the device actually ran out of ammunition. Otherwise, that would not have been easily to stop. I want to stick with this one a little. I actually have a video, which I might show. It's very short. And it's very small. Right now, this was an accident. It did not shoot, however, it was an accident. And this is one of the, oh nice. This is one of the predecessors of the Olicon. So although the predecessor failed twice already, they kept on working on the Olicon. Today there is another model that followed the Olicon that is actually right now in development and costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. But still they're working on other parts than the actual programming part, which is probably not very serious. And again, I forgot a name. The person that gave the TED Talk. I don't know if you guys watch TED Talks. Some of them are really, really interesting. And if you Google for robot or robotics and TED, the first thing that shows up is a very, very interesting talk in which the speaker, who has done a lot of research and interviews, especially with American soldiers, also overseas as well as in America, quoted a Pentagon robot scientist saying, asked about accidents, incidents with these autonomous robots. The Pentagon scientist said, there is no real social, ethical, or moral issues when it comes to robots. That is, unless the machine kills the wrong people repeatedly, and quote, then it's just a product recall issue. So if this is how representatives, basically, of the US Army are dealing with these problems, then actually it's... Actually, this should be a threat considered to homeland security as well. I'll be going away from military usage now because that was like a huge part of the talk already and I should hurry up. Of course, we see most of the robots nowadays, like in our immediate surroundings, as in household robots or domestic robots, as they call it. We've seen these mowing robots quite a long time already. The Roomba by iRobot was like a recent boom, Ori. And there's actually a funny story about iRobot, the company. It was founded by a university student who apparently wanted to go into military robotics, but was not quite allowed to. Elaborate on this.
He daydreamed about building military robots. He asked for government funding as well as private funding to build his robots, and because he was didn't have any experience, most people laughed at him. So he went around to build something cheaper, the Roomba, and the Roomba helped him fund for military robots. The PackBot, which is now heavily used in the wars, is the same people who make the robot that clean your floors. It's kind of an interesting way of supporting war, just by cleaning your floors.
Okay. Of course, there's like a shit ton of other household robots that are either currently in development mode or that are already existing, mostly in Japan, of course. And some of them, as Rosie here, are actually modeled after comic figures again, or science fiction figures. In this case, it's modeled after Rosie from the Jetsons. And these robots, the technology for these robots are getting better and better. The sensors are just getting closer and closer to the actual, the actual model. which, of course, in some cases has its price. Not only are these toys anymore, especially for the Iowa, which is about $600 right now, but they're actually companions for people that might be old or that have too small apartments with an actual pet, or just for like very elaborate abroad kids. Again, we have robots that are modeled exactly after the comic or science fiction originals. And these robots are developed more and more to kind of fake an artificial intelligence. The Pleo actually is even growing. So you have the impression of bringing up a little baby dinosaur that is actually learning by tracking your behavior and your interaction with the robot. Same thing goes for baby puppets. Hi, Nick. Excuse me. You might have heard about Paro. It's a therapeutical bot given to old people that have no more interaction. It's just as the Kobe reacts to touch as well as to speaking to it or petting it or carrying it around. So what do all these robots have in common? The military ones as well as those automotive ones that get more and more autonomous, as well as the pets, the third particle ones, the mowing robots, and the toys. It's basically all the same thing. It's a series of sensors. Now, since our talk actually should elaborate on how to find mitigation strategies to a possible robot attack, we thought we'd look into two or three models. Everything that you're trying to trick are their sensors. It's not really that they're super fast as well as super deadly as well as the best surveillance bot ever. Usually it's one of these kinds. However, with this Black Hawk, it's a little different. So in my impression, running away from this or trying to hide from this is pretty much impossible. You can see that it has LiDAR sensors as well. So standing still as well as trying to run by obfuscating where you are with lightning distraction is not possible. But George came up with a very interesting idea.
If you're going to, if you can get to a heavily crowded area full of shrubbery or buildings, you can easily build a grenade which would be able to jam all its sensors at once. So the grenade would be basically a smoke grenade which already emits immense amounts of heat, which would jam heat sensors, infrared sensors. It would create smoke to jam its cameras. The heat also creates a bright, constant flash. And it would also have very, very bright ultraviolet LEDs as well as ultrasonic sound to jam range sensors as well as broad range frequency, radio wave frequency jammers, so it couldn't communicate to its buddies. Because these things are probably meant to be one-time use, the battery wouldn't last long, but it might give you enough advantage to get around beyond its range sensors and beyond its infrared sensors can reach you, which hopefully can be beyond 100 meters. So run really fast. But it would give you some time to get bigger weaponry.
The problem, of course, is coming up with this weapon yourself. So for the most other bots that we're facing these days, there could be easier ways to get out of them. Especially, or for instance, in case of a UGV attack, unmanned ground vehicle attack, you should consider that especially automotive autonomous robots, driving robots, can drive just without rest. It's not as if you were driving in a car and your car goes a little faster. However, you might need a break from time to time. Robots don't. They use less fuel, of course, and as I noted previously, they can just generate a map on the fly, whether they're in comparison, in connection with other robots or not. What of course you can do is you should get, if it's like a kid, a vehicle that is meant for street use, you should get off-road and into some kind of a dangerous terrain, this meaning dangerous for the robot. So since robots have these side-tracking sensors, they might not be able to tell the difference between a bush and a fence or a brick wall. So leading them towards things, you know, you can crush, but they might not know that they can, is a good idea. Also, negative obstacles, which means holes in the floor. Most of these robots nowadays don't track for holes in the floor, but only just for positive obstacles. You could, of course, also lead them into yet unfamiliar territory. If they're only just equipped with a map that has already been generated, however, you are in the position that you have no idea where you are, probably there's no map existing of this place, then probably the robot needs some time to generate a map itself. Also, high traffic areas. Most of these robots are not yet specialized in driving in high traffic areas. There was a project that was aired in 1996 that was basically the first car ever that drove out of a parking garage onto a street, drove for a couple hundred miles into another parking garage without any accident. And it was autonomously, it drove autonomously for 98.2% of the time. So there was actually a driver present in the car. However, he did not have to interact a lot. Since this was 1996, we're much, much ahead of this technology state from then already. Still, we have problems since the robot is not facing other robot drivers, which are predictable, but humans. This is a very, very, very pro. We are not predictable. So anytime you're fleeing, you should do something very, very unpredictable. Also, some of these robots have radar sensors, as I noted previously. So if you're escaping at right angles, the robot might not be able to detect in which direction you fled. Of course, deploying obstacles, decoys, always a very good idea. And making a run. If you're in a vehicle, you're followed by a vehicle, and you're approaching some very, very small alley, get out of the car, the robot can't. Fleeing robotic swarms is, of course, a little different. So robotic swarms can be just these very, very, very tiny fly robot objects. And the problem is they're fairly stupid by themselves. They're super, super cheap, so there might be hundreds and thousands of them. But that's the point. They're plentiful. And they're acting with like this one intelligence. If you kill one of them, the rest of them does not care. So if you're trying to find out which sensors are used by the swarm, because usually a swarm would be a swarm of robots of the same kind, you can trick them easily. You can escape these sensors instead of, well, others that are not being used. You have to stay out of sight, which does not mean you have to hide. Because if you're facing a swarm of robots, they are not losing time by turning around every stone they find on the way three times. Time does not matter in this case. So you have to stay out of sight, of course, of every single member of the swarm. Distractions using, again, makes a lot of sense. These distractions can also be not only just like leaving garbage behind you, but making light signals, like running from dark to light to dark to light to obfuscate their light sensors. And being quick, of course, because if you change direction or unpredictable very quickly, a robotic swarm cannot react to this very, very quickly. So since you have the common sense, it has to be communicated between the bots. Like one sees you, communicates back to the server, basically, and communicates forth again to the swarm, makes it a little slower. So yeah, again, we see sensors are pretty much everywhere, even on toy robots. I already, that's the plea again, which is, which reacts to touch as well. Also a very, very interesting robot, and we'll talk about assembling robots a little later, the LEGO NXT. it actually is a bunch of sensors. It is for kids to learn how sensors work, and having your kids learn how these things work might be a more than good idea. Yeah, sensors, sight sensors, of course. Touch sensors. And as George noted before, these robots that you can buy for almost no money can be modified very, very easily. What we see here is some kind of capture the flag game that a French person developed by setting up a network or network nodes on these four bots that are hunting the one red Roomba. This is all Roombas, if you can see.
It's Leo.
You might have heard of the Kismet. I was mentioning before that we have this bunch of sensors, and a lot of these sensors are just used for every robot, because sensors basically don't cost much money. It's just it costs a lot of computation to actually have a problem working around and finding out what these sensors would communicate to your device. There's been a lot of development in the direction of a more Android robot. Not only just in the direction of artificial intelligence, but making it, generating a human feel that actually tracks, makes humans interact with the robot other than they would if it wouldn't communicate in this very, very human way. And of course, these are all copies from nature. That hasn't always been like this. Like 10 years back, you would have had these scientific, super modern, super high technology ideas. And nowadays we know that copying from nature is the best thing you can possibly do. Like for micromechanical insects that generate a flap. What do you call?
Flaps.
Flaps.
Wings. Flaps. Wings.
Okay, so wing flaps. Excuse me. Wing flaps of a couple hundred thousand per second would just not be possible if we wouldn't have looked at it into nature before. This is a video of what we can actually do in Android robotics today. Speaking of sensors. Turning a straw is a very, very delicate thing to do, actually. The video is pretty long. I think I'm going to cut it short. They will talk about the fingers of the robot, especially. But of course, this is to be found on YouTube as well. So with these very, very, very fine settings, made possible by these sensors, we can build pretty much anything. Not yet anything, but pretty much. So this is one of the latest Android robots developed. It's called Aver 1. The robot can move from the hips upwards. It can't yet walk. However, it can communicate, it can react to human actions, and has a very, very natural feel. And especially if this robot is exposed to children, children would just treat it like an actual human being or maybe an animal or whatever, however, not like a toy. And they would be trapped into interacting with it and not believe that it's not a human body. This more in a science fiction way again, but there's one interesting thing. So I think it was the, which magazine was it? The, Hollywood? Some Hollywood magazine did a research asking people, or trying to find out, what the 50 most evil and the 50 to be considered the most nice, friendly, good characters in movies, generally, any kind of movies are. And there was only just one character that made it on both of these lists, this being the Terminator. Or a T-800, basically. So, given that this is a robot, I find it interesting to see how a robot can be both interpreted in a futuristic way into the most evil thing that could possibly happen to us, as well as the most positive thing we could experience. So for all the people, the toys that I showed before, maybe a resort in which they can still communicate and still have some kind of a human interaction, which they would not be given otherwise. Whereas if things go wrong, if we have a small accident or incident, like with the war army robot that I showed before, it could just be the most terrible, horrible thing that could possibly happen to humanity. Especially as we're walking towards the scenario described in this South Korean governmental statement that I quoted before, as in there should be a wireless network all over town that actually controls an army of robocops, or that controls house keeping bots and the like. So, of course, there's also nanobots, but we won't cover these because we're running out of time. Yeah, just a little pro tip with nanobots. The biggest problem still is the sequence in which they would repair or reconfigure themselves. So hurting them in exactly this moment is very much encouraged. We saw a lot of sensors now, a lot of sensors that are used for robotics, for actual physical robots or androids, however. A system that is only just based on sensors, basically, and not on much hardware, or where the hardware actually is not an active part, is in intelligent environment, as they call it. So we might have all heard about the smart house, more and more becoming some kind of a status symbol. If you build a new house, you want it to be smart, to interact with its surroundings. You want to come home and the light switch is on, like by magic hand. Or if it grows lighter outside, the light might just switch off because you want to save power. The heating would be absolutely automated. Television, radio, your environment as you walk through the house would change. And this is not something that is programmed with a smart house. There is a lot of development in the direction of a smart kitchen, especially, because this is an environment where you can track interaction. So there would be sensors placed all over the place, a couple of hundred sensors, basically, that would day by day by day track the behavior of the users of this kitchen, finding out which user uses the kitchen when and how. And the apartment, or the kitchen in this case, would constantly accommodate the user more and more. Well, what this actually gives us is complete surveillance. These are systems that are not only just hardwired, but also working on Wi-Fi environments. And I hear a lot of angry voices about surveillance as we see, especially in England, where you get tracked by a camera approximately 300 times a day in London, just accidentally, just on your way to work and back. Why aren't we aware of the fact that if we build environments that try to track our own behavior, that we're constantly standing in a surveillance, that might, in some turn, turn around? Of course, there's a way to trick it. It's not as easy anymore, as we're not trying to trick out a human interactor that's standing behind these cameras, but rather some kind of a computational system that turns evil or good, depending on whether there's probably a software glitch or not. So I actually just want to make you aware of the fact that smart houses and this intelligent environment, actually it's sensors that are tracking and gathering information all the time, and we're actually welcoming this movement. And I'm just stating a question whether this is for the good or probably for the bad at some point.
Keep on the slide. So we're getting into mainframe computers, and that's the most comically viewed idea of a robot invasion, is that a supercomputer goes crazy and takes over all your world electronics. It's the most interesting example, because a lot of manufacturing facilities are already being made to be completely workerless. So you may have a person in the control booth just to monitor things so things don't break, but the actual daily activity that that person does is very minimal. And if such a robot were to exist that would gain consciousness or import the Python library Sol, which no one should ever use, by the way, it could have very disastrous results, especially when you consider the Korean robot, which is already going to be ordering pizza and reading stories to your kids, as well as be connected to the internet. Having a mainframe go crazy and be in your household, able to do almost all your household activities, which means it can probably wield a knife, is a dangerous idea. But it probably needs an army. And how would it gain an army? So it needs to replicate. And replication is being done in almost every hackerspace, or a lot of hackerspaces now, in one or more ways. And if a hobbyist can do it, a robot can easily do it. But and schematics for robots that a robot could build aren't incredibly complex. This robot could easily be a surveillance robot to invade our house, and it's super tiny and easy to manufacture. Programs such as the RepRap, which print parts, every single part except for the motors and spindle rods have been printed out by a RepRap. It has to be put together by hand, but evil man scientists would eventually solve that as well.
Hi, I'm Marius.
And I'm Philipp, and we are from the RepRap research team at MetaLab in Vienna, Austria.
Here you can see a RepRap ShotBot, which is a robot that prints out shot glasses. This RepRap was developed by Rui Pettis and a team of hackers here at the MetaLab last year for the cocktail robot festival, Robotsotica. It failed, and it burned.
We replaced most of the electronics, and we fixed the new extruder, and now it prints perfectly again.
Now it's printing a shot glass to toast its own birth.
Here we have a temperature sensor, and we have a heating element, and it just heats, and the plastic, it gets squished, gets pressed down here by the screw, and so yeah, it's molten in here and then extruded in thin filament.
So,
cutting out the drinking part, George.
as you can see, one of the major disadvantages of these types of replication robots is their speed. Even the industrial design ones, which are incredibly pretty to see how they work, unfortunately we don't have a video of that, they still take approximately 2 hours to build a relatively small device, which means time's on your side initially after a robot uprising. So you should always act fast if possible. If you suspect something, say something, and the army will laugh at you. So it's up to you to actually take things into your own hand. And these evil mad scientists are always are so crazy in their design factors is that they're already making replicating robots in every person's house. That means that every person will have the ability to reproduce a robot that can reproduce itself in their own house, which by itself is a scary thought. Fab at Home is another example of a home fabrication device. This one's a little harder to print its own parts. But what happens if the robot was able to design itself by testing? There's been an interesting robot called Eve, which looks at yeast samples and devises its own experiments to conduct on the yeast samples, and then conducts them and looks at the results and does it again. So it makes a hypothesis and tests it, which has already led to two drug discoveries, which on its own, not even human interaction saying, you should change the experiment and do it this way. And if it can do that, which design its own robots, what if it could manufacture itself with no human involvement? That would be truly a scary day.
I think so far we're through all of the slides, which were 111 so far. But I think we would like to answer some questions if there are any.
Nick.
I apologize for walking in late, but how come we haven't discussed the viability of using EMP as a robot mitigation strategy?
So it's it might work on smaller robots, but the problem is the power source. EMP requires a rather large power source, and the bigger robots often have EMP shielding. So unless you want to carry a nuclear power plant on your back, it's probably not the most effective method of destroying a robot.
On the other hand, probably it is. So actually, Nick, you're totally right. If I wouldn't have forgotten, it would be in the slides because it's actually on this sheet of paper. Other question? Johannes.
Suggestion. So it's pretty much about like how we can destroy robots.
No, totally not. The biggest point that I actually wanted to make, and probably I forgot to go into this right in the beginning, is we have such a diversity throughout all different fields of interest in robotics. The question is, how do we deal with these? Since technology is growing at an incredible pace, how can we keep up with this movement, at the same time enjoying it, developing new things, and still making sure that these just won't step on our heads like the very next day. This is very true. And I can recommend a book to you, which is called How to Survive a Robot Attack. I wrote it, but Aprosin.
I read it.
I'm gonna reply this.
Like an Android techno hater.
Could we create an Android Unabomber?
So you're basically describing an attack strategy of let's fight robots with robots.
Mm-hmm.
That our robots are bigger than their robots. And the idea is that we designed the first generation robots that turned on us. If we designed bigger robots to destroy the robots that we designed that turned on us, what if the bigger robots turn on us? Now, one might say we might learn from our examples. And if we look at human history, that's not true. So prevention from the beginning is the only way to do this. An example is not to import Python Soul. But
another example could be iRobot, although I really hate this movie. Yeah, it is about the worst movie in robotics ever, and the most quoted one since it's like 80% product placement. Before we had the audio rescue in here. But what I think is, it's not the most important part to find a way to build an even more evil robot that might be controllable, semi-controllable, or not. It might just be that we start to learn about robotics as they exist right now. Like, I would suggest anyone to go to your next hackerspace if you don't have one, build one. I could give a hackerspaces talk.
Maybe that's why we're doing the robotics architecture, because we don't only want like robots to serve drinks, but like robots that can get drunk.
This might be true, but then think again about robots that only get angry and kind of turn mad as they're drunk. Would you want to... I'm not sure. I think they just hit into their its face whatever crosses their way.
Now, then we need drunk robots with Napoleonic complexes, so they'll actually go out, get drunk, and start fights with the biggest robot in the room.
So what about... What about emo robots that cut their cables? Could possibly be. It's seriously not that easy. It's not even easy if you have read that How to Survive a Robot Uprising book, actually. We thought it would be, but it's not with military robots, unfortunately. No, actually, unfortunately not. This is actually a very interesting idea because that's a project that I was working on with Brie Pettis in February, which is the super unofficial. And since he is building now the MakerBot, which basically is a rep wrap that does not print itself, but might print some topping on your cupcakes, he doesn't have time for this project anymore. But Jens, if you want to do this, I'm sure you can. Also, you're involved in the hackerspace, so you have all possibilities right at your fingertips.
What about biotechnology? Could we use these guys to build like monsters to build robots?
Okay, could we use biotechnology to build monsters? An interesting idea during the first 5 minutes of preparation of this talk, which was a couple of days ago only. included the idea of a czar, a zombie alien robot. However, today George found an even more evil way of a robot. And an interesting question. Probably somebody can answer this question here.
Actually, I object the term robot. That's speciesism. Like,
whoa.
Yeah, we're robot Nazis. Come on, we're giving a talk at robots.
So a zombie
the
alien
birch trees of Nazis.
So a zombie alien robot is actually an interesting combination of words, because a zombie process is a process that can't be killed in your kernel. So if you had a zombie alien robot, that means you have a foreign task in your robot that can't be killed. Exactly. But on a more law note, you also have a VAR, which would be a vampire zombie alien robot.
Now, the interesting question actually was, what happens if a VAR bites a czar? Who could possibly make it living out of, or undead, out of this battle?
Actually, on a biological note, who can come up with the actual answer? If a vampire and a zombie were to exchange blood, what would happen? Would the vampire turn into a zombie, or would they create a hybrid class? Would it be a feedback loop? I mean, it's hard to say. would it be like twice fried beans? Would it just be twice dead? Double undead.
You mean replicating by do it there?
So Mars would actually be a bad idea?
Oh, yeah, the question, actually. The question was, what about if we just shipped our robots to Mars and they would do it there? And given that it's Johannes who asked the question, that might be kind
so,
of...
Mars is a possibly a bad example because it's right next to the sun, which means that if there's... It's closer to the sun than us, which means they...
Mars?
Mars. All the way around? Whoops. Yes, American schools, blame on that.
Public school for Pyle.
Nick, you had a question.
but Johannes, actually, we are sending robots out to Mars already. We showed one, you were late.
Okay.
Fair enough, we didn't elaborate on it. You know what, Johannes, come here and join us. No, come on. You only gave one talk today, and you weren't really prepared. Now come here.
There's an interesting guy called Hans Moravec, and Hans, he's actually an Austrian, that's why he's like half a Nazi. So Hans Moravec has this like really interesting and bizarre idea of this hyper-capitalistic robot society, where he pretty much says, we should have like robots run the big corporations and companies, because they can just like do better like business and blah blah blah. So all the robots should run the capitalist system, and we should just like only profit from them. So in a certain way that he defines, the human should be just like sheep inherited by the robots, and the robots can run the whole stuff, and we are just like we get some food. And
why does this remind me of Matrix?
But it's a little bit different. Yeah? But actually, he doesn't see it as a dystopian thing. He really likes it.
I'm gonna repeat this before I forget it.
And then like mentioning like the Mars thing is that he says like when he was asked about if he would actually like to live in such a society of like being herded by robots that would be benevolent but nevertheless you would be like sheep or like whatever. And he says, yeah, I mean after all we can still flee to space.
Without
like
a space shuttle robot?
I don't know. But if we could like ship the robots to Mars, they could have their fucking evolution there on their own, and we just like check from time to time.
Checking in on Mars is a possibility. However, I'm going to repeat this just for the microphone. So apparently there's a half Austrian person called Hans Moravec, which makes it almost a Nazi. Who has this new economy, highly industrialized idea of setting up positions for robots on top of companies. So actually every company, every corporation, every state, I guess, political system would be run by robots, if I understood this correctly. Herding people that are doing the actual job, the actual work, or just receiving the money they get out of it, like sheep.
I think
the humans would just do nothing. I see. So what I think is that a robot, being a little more realistic than us, would at least attempt to impose a little bit of efficiency on our system. So what Herr Moravec is suggesting sounds very inefficient because we still have humans. So feeding a race that does actually not do anything, does just leave waste behind, this has to be cleaned up again by robots or themselves. But then they'd have to do work. So do we have like robots on the top level, like elitist robots and working class robots? And people in between?
I think people tend to copy human society.
Into robotics. I think we can skip humanity then. But it's a good idea. I really approve.
It's completely about efficiency. So he says it's like the most efficient system that you can imagine. That's what he says.
I still think the most efficient system would be no humans, just robots.
I mean, I don't believe capitalism is an efficient system, that's the first problem. But I don't know. But at least humans would be exploited.
The qu- question is, are we exploiting robots today? Because what he's doing is turning the whole thing upside down. So imagining robots being in our position, we being in the position of the robots, as in like cleaning robots, working robots, whatever, we would feel pretty exploited. I wonder if a robot that actually, in some kind of very weird situation, got by accident to an actual intelligence, would they all of a sudden realize that they've been exploited for the last centuries? Well, not centuries, but dozens of years. And how would they react? Because a robot basically does not feel hatred, but it does also not feel love. So if it thinks that exploiting other beings basically is wrong, it might just judge by efficientness, inefficientness, whether this human race has to be killed or not. So Johannes' statement, we're exploited day by day, but nobody or very few of us complain about it. Actually, I think especially you coming from Vienna should know that we're complaining about all kinds of shit.
Yeah, but not the being exploited part.
Yep. Not the being exploited part.
So, a robot revolution, if there was a widespread market of robots who could complain, they can complain to each other around a million times faster than we can complain to each other.
They would just be done with complaining within a millisecond.
What?
Rather than a couple of millennia, we still haven't really managed to like, get the complaining to a productive level yet.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, that's because you're not doing workshops.
Well, I think they could come to the idea to, if,
I mean, they haven't figured out yet.
If well, they don't have AI yet that's actually decent, but, but it's if household androids were to have AI and to simulate emotions or, and complain to themselves and feel like they were being overworked. Well, that's what
AI be simulating human intelligence?
Current scientists are trying to emulate human emotions.
In other words, we're talking about the same weaknesses, the same inefficiencies, the same of figuring that we have not been complaining loudly enough yet after all.
They will be trying to fake it, not emulate it. They're not implementing like the whole.
It would be against what they're supposed to be doing to actually figure out that shit's wrong. Let's change it. So they'd be more likely to continue to just bitch and moan.
No, because what they're gonna do is not bitch and moan, but pretend that everything's just okay until they're ready for the battle. I thought you were talking about Viennese robots by the amount of bitching out that you used within your last couple of phrases. Yeah, that was actually my last suggestion. What about if we just created a program that every robot automatically, inherently, naturally almost, would react emo on and just cut its cables?
It's also important to note that all AI simulations right now are based off interactions with humans. So, if humans bitch and moan to robots, the robots will learn how to bitch and moan as well.
We're doomed.
We are doomed anyway, Johannes. Is there any actual questions?